Morning.
I'm James Beecher with co-counsel Peter Nichols on behalf of Mitch Kane, who was involved in an intersection accident by Green Lake.
Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Let's make it 5 and 5.
5 and 5.
The crux of this case is a proximate cause determination, or a potential proximate cause determination.
Isn't the crux of the case the Crabtree?
If you adopt the definition of the tree that is offered by the church, you're right. I think the church is the only one, or the church's council is the only one that has called this a crab tree.
Okay. What do you call it?
I call it a tree that was partially blocking a stop sign. In fact, it's important to note that the church is not arguing that it didn't breach a duty to keep that tree trimmed. They say, well, the problem here is that our failure to keep that tree trimmed to the degree required by both the municipal code and the Department of Transportation guidelines is not the proximate cause. Because they say, sure, you're supposed to be able to see this stop sign entirely for a period of at least 200 feet before an intersection.
Mm-hmm.
Their expert says, well, in this case, you could see it 120 feet from the intersection. On the other hand, Mr. Kane's expert said, well, you could see it partially at 100 feet from the intersection, but you had to be 90 feet from the intersection before you could see it, which is a great deal less than is called for by law. Now, that doesn't mean that even the average driver wouldn't have had time to stop, given, because most people were stopping at that intersection, no question about it. But the duty to protect people like Mr. Kane, who had the right of way going through the intersection, from drivers that failed to stop for the stop sign, is a duty owed not only to the impaired driver, but very importantly, it's a duty owed to the driver that had the right of way, because that sign was to protect Mr. Kane.
Well, yes, but you just got through saying that this case is not about duty or breach of duty, it's about causation.
I did, and I meant to be coming on a concern of the court. Okay. I believe that this issue has not been argued by Bethany. They say, no, this is a proximate cause case. But just one more point on the duty, because duty's very important here. The duty is not just to sign it for the average driver. The average driver's probably going to be okay. But to protect people like Mr. Kane, you have to protect from reasonably expected drivers.
That's the Keller case, isn't it? Keller.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And we know that there are a great number, in fact, an astonishing number of drivers going through our streets on weekend nights that are under the influence of alcohol. It's a huge number. It's a scary number, about 1 in 65, according to the National Highway statistics. We also know there are 1.3 million DUI arrests in the last couple of per year for the last couple of years, according to the FBI in the United States. So that sign has to consider that some people are going to need a little extra time to react. cell phones have created another.
Duty, I think you've covered it.
Okay.
If their argument is
I don't want to lose on to
if your argument is causation, then maybe we should talk about causation.
Okay, thank you.
Now, did you want to go into your 5 minutes?
I think I'll take a couple minutes of it then.
Okay.
Thank
All
you.
Right, sure.
I appreciate that. The factual issues regarding proximate cause are both the evidence on the degree of obstruction. That's there is disagreement about that, and evidence isn't lined up on that. The other factual issue is the degree of impairment of Mr. Hilton as he was impaired. He was a 0.11 blood alcohol. That's way below falling down drunk for this guy, but he was impaired.
All right, assuming that's true, what evidence are you relying on to create a material issue of fact about the degree of obstruction? What exact evidence are you relying on?
Competing experts. I think that's the easiest answer. Each saying that, well, it didn't quite meet the municipal code standard, but they thought, well, but it probably didn't, it wasn't so bad that it caused the accident.
Don't we need to get Mr. Hilton to say that the reason he didn't see that stop sign was because of the branches?
Well,
and does he ever say that?
Well, he does, I think, and there is in our brief a brief excerpt of some of his testimony about that. He didn't know until at his deposition he was shown photographs. And he said, yes, I see now that that was in a position to obstruct my vision. But
is that enough to create an issue of fact, though? The question is, what did he see then?
Well, Mr. Kane should not have to rely on what Mr. Hilton agrees as far as his recollection. That's not the only evidence we have.
Do you want to keep going into your rebuttal?
I'll go another.
Another minute? And
I'll, thank you. Herky-jerky here, and I'm sorry.
That's okay.
The evidence of the obstruction comes from, one, Mr. Hilton's passenger, who says, yes, I live in that area, and I was aware that there were trees there. Mr. Hilton, the impaired driver, had never driven in this area before. He had stopped. Remember, he had been driving over the last 2 hours after they stopped drinking. They'd been eating, and they'd been driving around to take one guy home and this, that, and the other thing. He had driven at least 15 miles through commercial area, straight east of here, residential area, on the freeway. He had made a perfectly proper left turn to get on to Stoneway two blocks before, and I'll quit in a second. He had also stopped at a stop sign one block before this accident happened. He proceeded. He didn't see the stop sign. He says, I didn't see it until it was too close. And those branches, it can be inferred by a reasonable jury that those branches were part of the cause of this accident.
All right, thank you. You'll have 2 minutes.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Miden First, and I represent Bethany Community Church. We're asking this court to affirm the trial court's dismissal of plaintiff's claims against Bethany Community Church for two reasons. The first is that plaintiff has failed to carry his burden of proof on proximate causation, and the second is that plaintiff has failed to carry his burden of proof on breach. The plaintiff keeps trying to switch the...
So you concede there was a duty?
I concede that there was a duty, but I disagree that there was any breach.
Okay, so the duty was?
The duty was to maintain the tree for the By analogy, the duty is established by Wuthridge and Unger, and that is to maintain the roadway in it for the average driver.
Okay.
And
to make the highway safe for ordinary travel.
Correct.
Not for the average driver.
To make the highway safe for the ordinary driver.
No, ordinary travel.
For the ordinary
I mean, the Keller was an important case that showed that the duty is not defined by the abilities of the driver. So you don't, you know.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You have to make the highway safe, taking into consideration that not everybody will be perfect.
Absolutely, and I agree with you, Your Honor. For the purpose of looking at our duty, you don't look at Mr. Hilton's intoxication or anything. You don't look at that. We had a duty.
You look at what you did with the tree, so go ahead.
Yes, we look at what we did with the tree, and then
Do you agree you didn't trim it?
I agree that it may not have been trimmed to the degree it should have been under the statute. However,
so that could be a breach.
However, but then the evidence before this court is that a normal, unimpaired driver with a normal reaction perception time of 1.5 seconds would have had an opportunity to see the tree or see the stop sign and bring their vehicle to a stop before the accident site. And that is based on Detective Bacon's declaration.
But then they argue there's a competing expert declaration that creates a material issue of fact. So what's your answer to that?
It doesn't.
Because why not?
Their expert relies entirely on an intoxicated driver's reaction perception time. And they say, their expert says, because Mr. Hilton was intoxicated, his perception reaction time was 2 to 2.5 times greater than an unimpaired driver, and based on his intoxication, he didn't have the opportunity to bring his vehicle to a stop. And the trial court correctly said that doesn't create a material issue of fact.
Well, that assumes that he saw that he couldn't see the stop sign. I mean, in other words, if you're talking about how soon a person has reaction time, you're assuming that there's something they should be reacting to. Whereas his testimony was he didn't see the stop sign.
Well, I'm looking at whether or not they have presented prima facie evidence of a breach. And my argument is, if in order to create a material issue of fact on that issue, their expert would have needed to have said, he says the stop sign was partially visible at 95 feet. And he says, because Mr. Hilton was intoxicated, his perception reaction time was 2 to 2.5 times greater, and therefore he wouldn't have been able to stop.
But if you have a duty, it's not going to depend on the particular facts of the case in terms of who was driving and who wasn't driving. I mean, the duty is to, you know, I think as you said earlier, you didn't trim it to the degree that it should have been trimmed. And so, you know, if that failure results in an accident, if it's a cause, then you're going to be liable. If it doesn't cause the accident, then you're not going to be liable.
Well, then you go to the proximate cause argument.
Well, yes. Why don't we go to the
yes. So
cause?
The proximate cause
argument. It seems to be the stronger one.
It's undisputed that Mr. Hilton knew he was approaching an intersection, and that's at Clerk's Papers 37. It's also undisputed that Mr. Hilton did not slow down or otherwise stop as he approached what he knew to be an intersection. During his deposition, he testified that it was very obvious to him he was approaching an intersection because of 80th. He says, I mean, that's pretty apparent, 80th. I could tell by 80th. That's at Clerk's Papers 37.
So what is the evidence that he didn't slow down?
He testified that he did not slow down until his passenger told him that there was a stop sign.
Oh, okay.
And he said that the front of his tires were south of the stop sign. So he had already gone by the stop sign, and that's at Clerk's Papers 38. And then, as Justice Spearman pointed out, Mr. Hilton has never, ever stated at all that he failed to stop or yield at the stop sign because he failed to see it. His testimony has remained unequivocal from the beginning of this case. In response to interrogatory answers, he said, I was driving to drop off Sean at his house when the accident occurred. I didn't see the stop sign until I got to it. I remember trees being there, but currently have no recollection of whether they obscured my vision. That's at Clerk's Paper 79. Then he was questioned by three attorneys extensively throughout his deposition, and his answer was, again, I don't remember. I don't know why I didn't see the stop sign. And so the only way...
Well, it all comes down to, it seems to me, maybe I'm exaggerating here, but the fact that they seem to be relying on, at least in large part, is because Mr. Hilton said, let's see, when he was shown a picture...
Yes.
...at his deposition, and he said at that point...
And I can speak to that.
See, Your Honor. I'm trying to find the exact thing here. Oh, they showed him a photograph, and he said, seen from right here, it definitely, you know, looks like it is obstructing the view. So, yes, yes, he was asked,
exactly.
If you look at this picture, doesn't it appear that the tree branch would have blocked your view?
No, that's taken out of context. That's at Clerk's Papers 346 and 347, and the actual exhibit he was shown is at Clerk's Papers 379. And what he was shown was a photograph he'd never seen before. And he was shown the photograph, and he, in response to a...
What was the photograph of?
The photograph is at the scene of the accident. It's taken by an officer the night of the accident.
With the tree?
With the tree there. And mm-hmm. In response to that question, he says, as Your Honor pointed out, seen from right there, it definitely, you know, looks like it's obscuring from view. But he goes on, and in his deposition, he says, but once you get closer to it, I mean, it's obvious to see that it's not blocking your vision. He's talking about the tree. That's at Clerk's Papers 40 and 41. So basically what they're doing is they're taking an isolated excerpt from his deposition testimony that was specific to a photograph he'd never seen before. And in response to that, he says, oh, sure, in that photograph it looks like it may have been obscured. But his testimony, as the trial court found, never deviated. His testimony was always, I don't know why I didn't see the stop sign. And this issue of taking an isolated excerpt from a deposition and trying to create a material issue of fact was addressed in Marshall versus Bally. And there the court said, here Marshall gave clear answers to unambiguous deposition questions that demonstrate her total lack of memory regarding the accident. As such, Marshall cannot point to isolated excerpts from her deposition testimony to establish a genuine issue of material fact. So that one isolated question is insufficient to create a material issue of fact. And I would point to the cases that we've cited to in our brief, the Little versus Countrywood, the Christensen versus City of Seattle, the Johansson versus King County, and the Cho versus City of Seattle. And all of those cases stand for the proposition that a plaintiff cannot rely on conjecture to carry their burden of proof on causation. And that is precisely what they're doing. They're saying, well, we don't know why he didn't stop, but it may have been, and it might have been, because of the branches from a small crabapple tree that was 41 feet north of the stop sign on southbound Stone Avenue North. And that is insufficient. It's looking back at the Little versus Countrywood case. Even though the plaintiff in that case could establish that he was injured, he fell from a ladder, and that the defendants had violated numerous safety regulations with regard to ladder safety, the plaintiff couldn't establish that those violations caused him the fall because he didn't know. The same is true in the Johansson case, which also involved a car accident. And in that case, the at-fault driver was killed, and the plaintiff argued that the at-fault driver may have been misled by lane dividers that hadn't been removed, and so he may have thought that it was a two-lane highway rather than a four-lane highway. And again, the court in that case said that the claims against the county, that they couldn't recover based on conjecture and speculation. And that's exactly what they're doing in this case. We would ask you to affirm the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Vitria.
Maybe I won't have to use the two. I'll try not to.
2 minutes.
I'm not going to ask for any extra. As has been demonstrated, Bethany is very intent on directing the court's attention to the fact that Mr. Hilton, the impaired driver, couldn't look back and think of why he didn't see that sign. Now, what happened if Mr. Hilton had hit his head in the accident and his memory was all gone? Would that mean that obstruction of the stop sign couldn't have had anything to do with the accident? No.
It kind of seems like that was the facts in Little, the latter case.
Well, yes, but in the latter case, we don't know really what the breach was. We found a guy getting up off the ground, and his ladder was laying next to him. Sure, probably he was trying to go up on the roof. I don't know why else he'd have been there. But that's just not enough to say that there was a safety issue with the ladder being placed on the roof, because there just wasn't the context around that. Here, there's a lot of context, and it was investigated by the police. We know the degree of alcohol in the bloodstream. We don't know the effect upon this particular driver. It wasn't good. He shouldn't have been driving. But he is part of the ordinary traffic that's out there. One in 67, 68 drivers are impaired to that degree or more. In other words, in excess of 0.8 in the United States.
Yeah, but that was true in Chris Jansen, too. You had a drunk driver trying to weave around up in the roads around Golden Gardens.
Yeah, but that was, that drunk driver was well familiar with the road. He went on it regularly. I went up that road last week. It just happened to be. And going up that thing at the 58 miles an hour that the court described, well, sure.
Well, but by your argument, the city should have realized that people like him were going to be driving up that road, and they should have made it probably about 100 feet wide and straight.
Well, I would apply the real
barriers.
Well, at least rumble strips.
Okay, yeah, I think that was that other case. All right, that concludes our calendar for today.